Hi, and welcome to episode 58 of Fully Boosted, a War Machine Hordes podcast. I'm Grant.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Brad.
And no Pete today. Pete is out on travel, but in his place, we have upgraded super hard and brought on, fresh off his 6-0 record at the WTC, Canadian WTC player Charles Soong. Charles, what's going on, man?
Hey, how's it going?
Good, so man. Before we allow Charles to do his intro, I didn't want to say this before we started the cast, but fresh out of the mouth from Tim Bank, he said multiple times claiming Charles Soong is the best War Machine player in all of Canada.
Yep, he has said that to us, yeah.
Tim's got a very, very sweet mouth, I tell you that.
I'm just saying, there's only one name that he says that about, and that's Charles Soong.
Yep.
He's too sweet. Yeah,
when he came on after the your guys' match at the Sioux, that's what he said.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the real trick is, how do we all become Charles Soong?
Mm-hmm.
No, so we're joking around a bit, but I mean, at least up to this point, what's the you mentioned before the cast, you jumped in a couple different factions beforehand. What's Charles Soong's War Machine story?
So I got into War Machine kind of by accident at Gen Con 2008 and didn't know anyone who played the game locally by then, so I bought Signar and Kador battle boxes just so I can find someone to play with.
Well, wait, you got to explain, how did you accidentally get into the game?
Well, I go to Gen Con pretty much every year. I volunteer for this event called True Dungeon. Not sure if anyone's heard of it. It's kind of like a giant interactive haunted house that uses D&D rules.
Nice.
Love it.
Anyway. Right. Yeah, that's great.
Have not heard of it, but I'm Googling it actively.
So yeah, that was I have some time at the dealer's hall and saw Privateer Press and then saw they're doing demos on War Machine. And I've never actually played any miniature games before then, so pretty lucky for me, War Machine is my first.
Nice.
It's a good way to start off.
That is a great one to
come
into.
That is a good way to start off.
Yeah. Although, I don't know, do you appreciate it? Can you appreciate it more when you don't have the horrible unnamed ones to reflect on?
I think I hear enough stories from everyone else.
That's true. So continue. So you picked it up and you didn't have any local players?
Yeah. Signar and Kador. Yeah, and I mostly concentrated on Signar for a few years. Had a bit of success. I think TempleCon 2011, I got second place. I was the one that killboxed myself with Nemo, and I had to use Thunderhead to throw himself in.
Wait, what did you do?
And then Thunderhead, that's great. That was like the first year of Steamroller, I think, 2011.
Okay.
And then if you killbox your caster, you lose the game right there.
Oh.
So that was a game in the finals where I was playing Nemo 1 versus Thagarosh 2. And then after Nemo's activation, I realized he's out of the kill box. So I had a Thunderhead overloaded with 5 focus. So he walked backward, two-handed pick up Nemo to throw him into the...
That's amazing.
It's either lose right away or make your opponent roll it, so...
Yeah.
Pretty much. And then, my opponent killed me to the dice.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Anyway, so that was that. I played Signar for a few years and then jumped into Scorn. Pretty much played Scorn competitively until the end of Mark II. And then when Mark III dropped, Mercenary looked really interesting, and I've already collected a good chunk of it due to Signar.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, let's do this.
It's an easy transition. All you need is a couple Warcasters and a couple Jacks, and you're ready to go.
Yeah, basically.
It's actually a lot more involved than that. Like, because Mercenary is split into, like, 3 or 4 sub-factions.
Right, right.
And, like, even just your battle group models don't overlap over several casters.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
So even just all my Cephalix models, for example, right, does not overlap anywhere else.
Right.
So I think my Mercenary collection is actually my largest model count. Like, much bigger than my Scorn already as well.
Sure.
I think it would probably have to be.
Right? Yeah, I would think so.
I don't see any way that it couldn't be.
I mean, unless you were only playing Cephalix or Pirates or Dwarves, like, exclusively. I don't
if
think
you pick
it would have
one
to
of the
be.
Sub-factions.
Right. Yeah, but... that's what I mean.
Yeah.
if you're playing Mercenaries as a whole, I don't see any way it could be smaller than Scorn, assuming that like you're going for like the competitive line where you own the majority of models available.
Exactly. And with the Theme Forester, there's a need for a lot of duplicate models as well.
Mm-hmm.
So just in my Cephalix army, I have 7 heavies and 60 drudges.
Fuck.
Is that enough?
And that just, and I don't even own Siphon.
Holy shit.
Holy cow.
That's awesome.
That was actually the most remarkable thing about all of those
things. Yes, yes. The most remarkable thing he said is that he doesn't own Siphon. It's great.
Do you own every unit that a Dominator could be on?
Not really. I don't own Devil Dogs,
right.
Sea Dogs. I haven't bought into a lot of pirates myself yet.
Is that changing in the future or no?
Not yet, unless the pirates get some kind of fix. Their infantry are very anti-infantry based, so they pretty much prey on enemy living warrior models. And there's a lot of issues with that in the current meta, and there's a lot of undead and a lot of heavy warjacks.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So I don't see them being a mainstream anytime soon.
So, I mean, I think we kind of accidentally transitioned into all the new theme forces that came out for Mercenaries. So the prior to the theme apocalypse, we had Kingmaker, Hammerstrike, and Operating Theater. Operating Theater is Cephalix. Hammerstrike is all the Rulic models. And then Kingmaker is a little bit of a mix of everything, but mostly Steelhead. Is that just about correct?
Yeah, Steelhead and some mix of Signar infantry.
Okay. I don't know if this is true or not. I remember playing Intruder Damiano list, and I think it was just about all. So are there other versions of Kingmaker you saw or that you played that had more of the Signar inclusions or like the Boomhauer version?
Yeah, so I've played Damiano for pretty much since Kingmaker dropped, and I think went through at least 10 or 12 iterations of it. And in the beginning, I had a minimum unit of Boomhowlers for the ambush.
Mm-hmm.
And then after about the first 15 games or so, where I think out of 12 games, I actually forgot to put them on the table.
Yeah.
I'm just like, yeah, this is not for me.
Yep.
So I went through several mixture of unit and warjacks and things like that. And the one I settled on at last was the version I played at the South Ontario Open and the same list I brought to War Machine Weekend. Sorry, WTC.
Mm-hmm.
And that's with a max unit of trenchers with a UA and one grenade. I take Rangers and max Crows Cutthroats and 2 units of Steelheads and 3 Nomads as my battle group.
Nice. I like that.
Seems
yeah, it's very mixed. I've seen people play Maker with all the Steelheads as well, and I've seen people do good things with it as well. But Surefoot and Trenchers is just such a ball-busting synergy. You can't let that go.
Yeah, that's too good, really good to not abuse. So talking about, you've been doing, I mean, like you just said, you've been playing basically Kingmakers since that came out. So where do you see let's talk about the new themes first. So we got Irregulars, Italian Charter, and Lely's Resistance. So
before we go into them, Charles, which is your least favorite of those three?
The current 3 existing themes?
No, the 3 that just came out, Lely's, Italian, and Irregulars.
That would be Italians.
Let's do Italian first then, because it's the most boring. Let's not leave it for the end.
Yep.
So the army can be made out of privateer warcasters, non-character warjacks, and privateer models and units. For every 25 points of privateer models and units in the army, you can include 1 weapon crew unit or souls to the army free of cost. Souls in the army gain dodge, and 1 press gang unit in the army gains ambush. End of benefits.
Yep.
So what about this? Do you not particularly like, I guess, is it the benefits or just the limited? I mean, that it's
a little bit of everything. So I think the biggest issue with it is the model selection, because you're pretty much restricted to pirate models. So pirate models, you have 2 units and the Commodore and the Sea Dog Cannon. And there's a limited profile of enemy they can deal well with into, but you know, anything that has several heavy jacks or a lot of undead, they just become preyed upon. And most of the pirate solos, I think most people agree they're a little bit on the overcosted side. They're usually used to be costing 2 points in Mark II and just transition into costing 4 without gaining anything.
Right.
So I just feel like it's a bit of a model selection, and a lot of the factor is the current meta don't deal favorably in.
Oh yeah, I was just looking through the press gangers only RFP living.
Correct.
That's, so that's awful.
Go ahead, Ryan. No, you, Ryan.
Do you think that this would have more legs, let's say, if like Legion of Steel or the Menoth, the new Menoth theme that has all the living infantry? Do you think that would start to swing this back into where you could possibly start seeing this be more active, or do you think it's just there'll never be enough single wound living infantry around?
I think if the infantry heavy list makes a bit more showing, then yeah, and it's more like you have to know your meta, and when you go to an event, you have to have a decent idea of who's going to be there. Otherwise, you're kind of just gambling on this list. But I mean, of course, you can do that if there's a caster you like and a list you feel will work. But a lot of times I feel like if you go that route, your off list will have to do a lot more heavy lifting and cover more matchups.
Gotcha. So it would be you'd have to bring this specifically for something targeted for it to be useful.
Pretty much.
So
or you just really like to have fun.
If you were to play this, what caster would you run it with? Not that you have a ton of options, but
not really. Probably Bart, because he mostly just wants a galleon for the battle group, and any other thing is a bonus.
Sure.
He's probably the strongest one out of the three pirate casters. I mean, Shay, you know, threatens a million miles, but he doesn't have anything to deal with a lot of armor stacking, or he only buffs speed.
Right.
So then your army is left to do all the heavy lifting on its own, kind of thing.
So, Brad, I think you had one more question.
Mine was in a similar vein to what Grant just said. Assuming the meta is kind of roughly in the same place that it is now, and you kind of answered it with Bart and the Galleon, is that like the most competitively minded list that you would consider bringing if someone kind of like challenged you to use this theme force?
Off the top of my head, yes. Bart was the caster I took to WTC Solo Masters last year as well. So, yeah, that Galleon is just very solid damage output. All
sure is. So I was going to move on to which of the two would be your next favorite.
That would be the Laylee's.
Laylee's resistance is... So you like Irregulars more than Laylee's resistance?
Yeah, mostly because Irregular is probably the most flexible theme in the entire game right now.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And
so you can
build it to answer almost anything.
Laylee's literally has like every solo.
Yeah.
14 things from what you're allowed to use.
Yeah, so Brad, you want to read through that? Have fun.
I'd love to. it's Laylee's Warcasters, Kane's Hill Slingers, Drake, McBane, and non-character Warjacks to comprise the Warcasters and Battle Group. Beyond that, we have Laylee's Models and Units, Captain Sam at Corn and the Devil Dogs, Dan and Blythe and Bull, Kobe Storling, Captain of the BRI. Beyond that, we have Eilish. We have the Gobber Tinker Solos, Harlan Versch, Madeline Corbeau, Rupert Corvallo, Rutger Shaw, and then Silas Wishnailer. If you should choose to play this theme,
and
the
Reinhold.
Army.
I think you skipped Reinhold.
Did I skip Reinhold?
You did.
Did I skip Reinhold? I don't know where he is in the list, but I'll.
It's Reinhold. You can also take Reinhold.
All right, sure. Anyway, Reinhold's there. This army can include up to two non-character Crucible units, which are, of course, not even out yet, up to two non-character Signar units, or up to two non-character Menoth units. These units are considered to be the Laylee's mercenary units instead of whatever respective faction they are. If Ace is included in the army, he's considered to be a mercenary model, not a Signar model. For every 20 points of units and solos in this army, you can add one free command attachment or solo to the army free of cost. Free models don't count towards free things. Laylee's models gain Pathfinder. And then before models are deployed at the start of the game, you can place One 5-inch rubble terrain feature anywhere complete within 18 inches of the rear of your deployment edge.
Yep. So what are the hot options for the Signar? Obviously, Crucible Guard isn't an option. So Signar, Menoth, I mean, the easy ones that come to mind, Stormlances, Choir.
Yep.
Kane 3 running a Choired Galleon.
Yep.
That was one of the first thing I tested in the CID.
How did you?
Terrible.
All right.
But it sounded like a lot of fun, so I ran 2 galleons.
That sounds terrible. I mean, not terrible. Like, that sounds like I would if I saw that, I would just cry.
What's funny about
it's,
that,
it's
though,
it's so bad I ran 2.
Right, right.
In 2017, you've actually got 2 large bases is really hard in 2017. Yeah. But, God, could you imagine, like, that in a 2016 scenario? Like, just even terrain. Someone, some TO puts not enough terrain on the table. That is just brutal.
That is a rough one. So where have a lot of people ended up with? I mean, I know I've seen Stormlances. I'm trying to think what the other Signar unit that they took. I guess it would have been
Trenchers.
Yeah. I mean, is that where a lot of people have ended up? If they want to go Jack Heavy, they go Choir and then something for Menoth. And then if they don't, it's Trenchers in Stormlances? Or is there some other options there?
So for the Signar side, I think most of the people I talk to kind of agree the Trencher is the first unit you would take. Because in the theme, they become Laylees. And if you have Gibbs, which of course you're going to take.
Of course.
It gives all the Laylees model within his command 7, reposition 3. So right there you have a cloud ball.
Yep.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then the other unit, and you generally take something, you know, independent and hard-hitting, and that you could deliver with your cloud wall. So that's typically Storm Lances, or I've heard people say Storm Blades.
Yeah,
I think there's good merits in that.
Yes, I mean, Storm Blades with reposition 3 behind a cloud wall seem pretty good to me, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they gain Pathfinder natively.
Oh, mm-hmm. God, yeah, right. So that's one of their biggest weaknesses. Huge, yeah. That's huge.
Same with Trenchers. Trenchers don't have Pathfinder. So, like, getting that on them and then Repo 3, it's like, okay, I'm good. I have everything I need.
So exactly. Which Warcaster is running these, though? Because I know Drake and Cade's Hellslingers were mentioned. Who are the other Laylee's Warcasters?
You have Ashlyn, which through the CID gained a few new benefits as well. Mm-hmm. And what we'll see what she looks like when she drops. And then there's the Gaston 2, which looks quite interesting. I don't think it's going to be meta-bending at all, but he looks interesting enough to that I want to play him. And I guess, sorry, I just want to mention, so outside of the Signar, the other route that people generally would take, I would think, is you would take Drake, and you have a Galleon, and you take Choir and Zealots.
Oh, and yes, that's what it was. It was Choir and Zealots, yeah.
Yeah, because you can feed to make them, right?
Yeah, you would basically put countermeasure on the Zealous units, and you feed on the unit leader, and you just run them up.
That's...
And you let them kill the whole unit, and you bring the whole unit back.
That's ridiculous.
Hello!
I love it.
Yeah, a bit of a Mark II Zealots.
Would you play that army?
I have not. I've heard people have, and seems to have its own niche. But you're basically giving up the cloud wall, and well, at least your galleon have choir to cover for it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But the issue I have with that is because the free benefits of the theme keys off units, and if you're taking choir, that use up one of your faction slots,
it's
a very low point unit. So you end up like just jamming in a lot of solo just to make the points, or you don't make the 3 free solos.
So you're literally giving up a bunch of free stuff for an acquired galleon.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Which is an okay trade if that's what you're building your list. Like, if I'm building my list around a galleon, spells and no shooting.
Could come into a specific spot where, like, oh, they're the thing I want to shoot, they're important things behind a forest. All right, I don't get to use this acquired galleon.
Right, exactly. have you... So what do you like here? Like, if you were going to play this, what route would you go? Is it more of an Ashlyn post CID, Kane 3?
So Ashlyn, I guess, just get that out of the way. I don't really consider Kane 3 exist in Mercenaries.
That's fair.
All right.
Anyway, so yeah, I would go with Ashlyn or Gaston, and just because I own the Sigma models already, I would take Trenchers and Stormlances.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I think both of those casters support them very well.
I think Ashlyn's going to be absolutely crazy. If she Ashlyn... keeps 90% of what she had at the end of the CID, she's going to be absolutely nuts.
Yeah, veteran leader is huge.
Yeah.
Ashlyn Stormlances seem great.
Mm-hmm. Just... yeah. Def 13 in roulette seems real good. Or she has quick, yep.
She has
distraction. Still, right?
No, she's distraction still. So I believe she's still keeping distraction, so they'll be even higher. Or not, quicken, yes.
Yeah, so def 15 in roulette, like, get fucked.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not killing that. And she picked up something else, too. I can't remember what they replaced Twister with now.
It's a Chosen Ground. Chosen I think it's ground. A 2-cost upkeep on herself. And I think it's control area. Her battle group gains Pathfinder and cannot be knocked down.
Knocked down. Yeah, nice. It's the same thing that Coleslaw has in Kador.
Gotcha. All right. So, anything else on this theme? I mean, do you like this theme? Do you think is it too limiting in the warcasters that it can play? Like, what do you think about this one?
I think it's pretty good. I mean, you have access to Gorman and Ragman for your damage buffs. So even though you're not having any kind of like the heavy hitters besides if you take a Galleon. I think the theme is very flexible, and I'm looking forward to playing it as soon as Ashlyn updates and Gaston 2 comes out.
And I can
not
tell
to mention
you,
when Crucible Guard, not to mention when Crucible Guard come out.
Yeah. And I can tell you from playing Limited Striker 2 that not to underestimate a full heal from Gibbs on any warcaster that has taken some points of damage where they don't want to.
Definitely.
That's a big deal. All right, so let's move on then to irregulars. Brad, lead
the
us on.
The irregulars. Mercenary warcasters, non-mercenary warjacks, mercenary units, mercenary character solos, gobber tinker solos, Brun, Cragback, and Lug, Dahlia and Scareth, Rorschenbrine, Wrong Eye and Snapjaw, and then mercenary battle engines. For every 25 points of units and warjacks in this army, you can add one command attachment or small or medium base solo without the lesser warlock special role to the army free of cost. If ace in the army, he's a mercenary model. While controlled by a jack marshal, warjacks in this army gain flank off a warrior model. And for each unit in this army, one heavy jack in this army can gain advanced move.
I love this theme.
It's the best.
Yeah, so talk to us about this theme and what you love about it and why this is going to be so good.
I mean, the first thing you notice would be there's almost no restriction on what you can take. So outside mm-hmm. of Cephalex, you can take pretty much an entire faction.
Mm-hmm.
And that's unprecedented. There's no other theme with this kind of models and unit selections.
Yep.
And then the second thing is because your free benefits keys off units and war decks, you can very easily crank it up to 4. And with the solo selection, I think pretty easily get to 22 or 23 points of free stuff, which is pretty massive.
Yeah, that's great.
So, I mean, what are we grabbing? We're grabbing like Iris 1. What else are we throwing in there? Maybe like an Orin or an Eilish?
Yeah, pretty much depends on like what you think the meta will be.
Mm-hmm.
So Iris 1 is kind of an auto include.
Mm-hmm.
For me so far, Alish has been auto as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's 12 points either, right there, right? Like just for those two.
Yeah. And then I will either grab Hutchuck, Ragman, Orin, or Kel based on what I see across the table or what I expect to see.
Mm-hmm.
Huckchuck is so good for being free. Like he almost fits for 6 points, but for free, it's amazing.
All of the journeyman warlocks, they don't count towards the free points. Are any of them worth jumping out for? Are they inclusions in your list at this point?
Gaston has not made an appearance in all my list yet.
Oh no, I mean like
Wrong Eye,
Giant Scareth, Wrong Eye Rorsch.
Yes. Well, you gotta remember when you take one of those, you're losing one solo, so you're losing 4 to 5 points of it. But there are some specific synergies, like Wrong Eye in a Fiona list is extremely strong.
Yeah,
when you stack Dark Omen and Starcross, mm-hmm. basically you're just saying, you're not going to hit me, even if I'm like Death 11 or something.
Yeah, because it's what, two dice drop the highest?
Yep.
That's so bad.
It is very tilting. Yep. I think that's the one that stands out the most. I think right now, and I've made, I guess, irregular lists for pretty much all the casters, and Rong'ai and Fiona, I think, is the only one that went in.
I mean, I could see, I'm not saying if she would run it, but Ashlyn with Rong'ai and Snapjaw on her feet turn seems like, I don't know if we already talked about this, but somebody's talking about, like, the math you have to, like, that seems like a miserable thing for your opponent. Like, okay, add three dice, I get, and then drop the highest, and then I get to pick the rest or whatever. It's like, that seems awful.
It is. And that's, yeah, that is something that, I mean, actually, one of her problems is that her battle group tends to be defense 10 on the heavies. Mm-hmm. And even that, he does not protect it very well. But right. Yeah, once you stack it with Starcross, then even Defense 10 becomes like, oh, I think I need to boost.
Yeah, yeah. I guess I should boost this.
Roll six dice. 10.
Yeah.
Roll six dice, still miss.
Yeah.
Oh, yep.
Oh, that's terrible. So
that would be the one time, I guess, you could get to seven dice. You get a hand of Fate Caster with a boosted attack into that. It would just be like, literally, you
drop
would shoot
the lowest, drop the highest, and Ashlyn just gets rid of two.
Yeah. That still has to
seven
just
dice.
Skew your math. Like, you know what? I don't even know what I need. I'm just going to roll it and we'll see if I hit.
That's literally, it would just like, put your opponent on tilt.
Right. You can't even do the math to like figure out what that skews. Just like start slinging dice at that point and see if anything happens.
Yeah, just ask the Ashlyn player, like, you figure it out.
Yeah, you're picking the dice. You tell me. That's awesome.
Yes, no.
So, I mean, I know there's so many options, and I'm sure it's going to take a long time for this to truly get unlocked, but, I mean, what are like, the favorite casters right now? I know you had mentioned you've done the Fiona list. I know that's picking up some steam because Crix and Ghost Fleet drop, but what... or not Ghost Fleet, I guess just Crix, right?
She play? I think so, but I don't think Fiona is like a good counter into Crix at all. Mostly, she doesn't have a damage buff, and she will deliver your army for one turn, but after that you're not doing much work with her.
Yeah.
So
who else?
She's one of my,
do you like in this?
Yeah, she's one of my favorite in mercenaries, but I think she's in the kind of a fun bracket right now.
Sure.
So right now, I think the list I have the most hope for dealing with Ghost Fleet is Damiano in Irregulars.
Mm. And why is that?
Well, he basically has buff for everything. So he buffs speed with Death March and Warpath, Road to War. Mm-hmm. He buffs strength and armor with his feet. And he buffs accuracy, melee and range with Death March and Deadeye, respectively.
Yep.
And then defense with Surefoot. So he's basically, I think, the most well-rounded merc caster. And with Irregulars, you can basically tailor your list to the things that Ghost Fleet would have trouble with. So the list would be, and it's kind of weird, Damiano with a battle group of four talons, no heavies. You take Idrians with UA, Precursor Knights with UA, and Max Crow's Cutthroats, two units of Eliminators, and what else? Ion and Halt. And then you have five solos, Anastasia, Orin, Elish, Iris, and Kel. So you're basically packing, because Damiano has 28 Warjack points, you can take Anastasia and still max out your four free items.
Oh, that's sweet.
Nice.
So basically, for any caster that has at least 28 Warjack points, Anastasia goes in for me automatically.
Yep, sure.
Yeah, and then the rest is all, you either have Stealth, or you have Bell Ward, and I guess the Idrians, in the previous version of this list, the Idrians were Kayazis. But I found out that even Kayazis with Surefoot lose to Pirates in melee.
That's horrible.
That's kind of sad.
That is so sad.
How does that even, like, I'm just trying to, because they still have, they have Duelist, they have Surefoot.
Yep, so they go to defend 17 in melee. So they need Gang, so they're kind of clustered together to just to hit the Pirates reliably. Mm-hmm. So the Pirates also have Gang. And generally, they will have the veteran leader, Bubble from Rengrave, because it's giant bubble.
Yeah.
And they have Gang and Point Blank. So each of them gets to make two attacks in melee at their base mat 5. With Gang goes to 7. That leader goes to 8. So they put two Pirates on one Kayazi, and they get 4 shots at rolling a single 9. Okay. And as long as they hit a 9, you die.
Yep.
Yeah, that's... Mm-hmm. That's horrible.
Yeah, that's super sad.
That makes me really
sad.
It's a lot
worse than what it looked like initially.
Yeah.
And especially with some of them being brought back, if they can just walk into your back arc, that's even easier.
Ugh, that's awful. Yeah. Now it's a 7.
Yeah, yep. that's pretty horrific. And the worst part is you're only killing even his best because you need Gang, so you're only killing 5 Pirates a turn with that in reprisals, and that's assuming you're getting all 10 of your guys on. Ugh.
And then, if the Pirates don't get into melee, they could aim. Or, aiming to a 6, vet leader to a 7, so a single 8 will hit the Kayazis, assuming they're not engaged. So yeah, everything is bad.
Yeah, that all sounds terrible.
Yeah, that's great.
I think I like Idrian's a lot better in that instance.
Yep. I mean, at least with Surefoot, they go to 15 and they can shoot and reposition back a little bit and, you know, force them to use their weaker gun instead of the stronger melee.
You can't even avoid they ignore cover on the rifles, right? So
yes.
The go to ground doesn't do shit Idrians. Ugh, that's annoying.
Yes.
This sounds horrible, Charles. I'm out.
It is. I mean, last weekend I went to a local event and I borrowed this unit of precursors from a friend, and I put them on the table, and 3 guys nearby just all of a sudden came together as like precursor knights.
Mm-hmm.
What are they?
Yeah, that
all 3 of them pulled out War Room just to look it up. Yeah,
that was actually going to be the next point. I already had them up because I play Signar. Now that they've been added, I've been looking at them, but I still don't love them, and I don't own them. But,
I've actually seen them on the table once.
I could see them with Damiano being good, because on feet, they can go to, what, a 21 armor?
Yep.
And then they actually hit it, what is it, PAL 15 Weapon Master that's blessed?
Yep.
Like, that's not bad.
Sounds decent, but again, it's it just goes fully. It has pretty much all the answers it needs.
Yep.
So that unit is there for a spell ward and magical weapons.
Sure.
So if you don't have that, you cannot force the Wraith Engine to engage. Mm-hmm. It will just stay incorporeal pretty much the entire time. And even with it, you know, you usually need Shield Wall, or, you know, their Pirate's Pistols will pick you off easily.
Yep.
And if you're in Shield Wall, what Denny could do is run a pirate in front of an arc node and use that as the target.
Mm-hmm.
And armor 21 doesn't do much when you're corroded.
No,
it sure doesn't.
No, it sounds horrible.
Yeah.
So
even when you bring all these specific tools, you're still kind of playing a very reactive game. And at the end of the day, it still goes fleet.
Do you think that list, or some variation of what you just described, is that the best mercenary answer to Ghost Fleet right now?
It's the best one I've come up with so far, with collaboration with some other people I talked to.
Sure. I have to be honest, the list sounds super interesting, but then you talked me off of it by all the things you just said.
I mean, yeah, you look at Ghost Fleet and you look at all the pieces, yeah, you can take that could counter or make their life a little bit harder.
Right.
And I think at best, you get to a 50-50. And that's about as good as mercenaries can do at the moment, I think. Sure, somebody could prove me wrong.
So if you're not teching it to Ghost Fleet, what are some of the other like one other caster, something else that you like with this theme that may not necessarily just be a Crix answer.
Oh, the one of my favorite one right now is Magnus 2 with six heavies as a battle group. So it's mostly focused on because your heavies get advanced move in the theme.
Mm-hmm.
So the list is Magnus 2, 5 Nomads, a Freebooter, a Buccaneer, Iron Holt, double Eliminators, and double Dwarf Mortar Crew. And then plus your Anastasia and 4 solos.
Oh, because those because that's a unit, right? So that counts for your – that gives you advanced move?
So, yeah. So 5 out of your 6 heavies gets advanced move.
That's awesome.
And Magnus has Escort. So even if you go first, you can put your – at least the Freebooter, you can put them on the halfway line on the board.
No Renegades?
Yeah, so much – no Renegades. You want me to go into that a bit?
Sure, yeah. Well, I'm just looking curious, through.
Like, it's like that's the thing you get with Magnus, is you get to take it, you know, that one Renegade.
I feel like with Magnus 1, I would take one Renegade. With Magnus 2, so that's the way I broke it down was, if you have to cast Calamity, right, so after you put it on target, if you need both a hit and damage bonus, then each attack you make with it gives you roughly one focus of boost, right? Because it's +2/+2.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, on a target that the defense matters, you need to hit boost. So Magnus is spending 4 focus.
Yep.
And then you're sending in your heavies or whatever, and then you can benefit from this. So compare that to just allocating 4 focus and loading up 2 Nomads fully. Sure. On most target profiles, the 2 fully Nomads will just kill it. That's not even taking into consideration you need to have a Renegade and need to walk into position or run without contributing anything else. It costs almost the same as a Nomad. And then there's a good amount of spell counters in the game.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, generally out of my experience, I found I just play more Nomads and, you know, allocation is the spell that I cast every turn.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I never thought about the fact that it would be 4 focus to try to get that Calamity.
Yeah, I've kind of gone through that when I was starting with Kane 3 for a little bit. Yeah. Was like, okay, well, have the Arc Node. Well, that's great, but just like Charles was saying, it's going to cost me 4 focus. Like, it's
okay,
kind of
cool. Yeah, I was just curious about that. Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. I never thought about it that way.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, the interesting thing with the list is Magnus has a really good synergy with the Freebooter. Because he has Field Marshal Unyielding.
Yep.
And then he also has Bullet Dodger. So you put a Bullet Dodger on the Freebooter. Now it's defense 14. It's natively steady, so it can't be knocked down. So now your opponent look at it and think, do I engage it? Or do I engage it at reach so it doesn't get unyielding? Or do I engage it, you know, at base to base so it can't dodge away after one miss? So you're actually making your opponent engage you closer.
Yep.
Or you say you miss, okay, I walk away.
I like that a lot. I had to look, mm-hmm. I had to go, and I forgot Magnus 2 even had Calamity. Like, I just never see him, so I had to look through his whole spell list while Charles was talking about the list. Like, what the fuck does he do?
So with we kind of hinted at it when we first introduced you, Charles, but you're WTC experience, your team went 5-1, yourself personally went 6-0. So we reached out to you, one, to talk about WTC because we tried to coordinate with Iron a couple times and our schedules don't line up, and that's a big drawing point. And secondly, in our small corner of the world, there's a three-man team tournament that uses a similar pairing style. And having someone that had done so well at the similar team style event, it would be good to talk about the whole team mentality and pairing process with yourself.
Sure. So usually, like, I think most teams, before WTC, they would look up the list of the other teams, and they would build up a matrix of how comfortable do you feel playing into each of their 5 players.
Mm-hmm.
And So for our team, for me personally, I just have one dodge. It's that I cannot play Ghost Fleet. I feel like my pairing, which is Osram and Damiano, could handle almost everything else in the meta. So that's what I told my captain, and we kind of agreed that I get to dodge Ghost Fleet, and I have to pull my weight and make those count. So a lot of times, several times actually, because I only have one dodge. So if we, let's see, I think we go second, because most of the time we lost the roll and we get to choose, I think, B position. So we would put me up first, and then the opponent would be like, oh, mercenaries, here's Ghost Fleet and someone else we want you to play. Because basically I don't have a choice at that point.
Right, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So most of the time it's whoever on their team feels like they could handle mercenaries, and then they pair that with a Ghost Fleet, and I have to pick the non-Ghost Fleet player.
So basically you took one for the team every round and went 6-0.
Not really. I mean, I'm not taking Ghost Fleet.
No, but I mean, you're letting them essentially, they're dictating who you're going to play, though, because you, like you said, you can't pick Ghost Fleet.
I will say, obviously, they were wrong.
I know. I'm just, and I guess I didn't mean like you weren't the sacrificial lamb, but like you didn't really get a choice.
Yeah. You always played into the worst,
right?
Besides the worst.
Yep. Yeah. If they close this process, then yeah, that's what we got on I think round 3, 4, 5, and 6, like. All the rounds on Sunday, I think that was the pairing process. So yeah.
So this one, so we're doing a similar format in that it's, but except it's only three teams, obviously. So one gets to pick two matchups, and one gets to pick the tables.
Oh, cool. Okay. It's not the standard three-man team where you have captain, first lieutenant,
no,
second lieutenant.
No, this is actually a WTC style three-man team tournament.
Oh, yeah, cool. So Norbert was actually playing War Machine up in this North Jersey area for a long while. So when Seth, the gentleman that's running the Boker Brawl, wanted to run it similar to the WTC, but the venue they had in the first year doing it wanted to only do three-man teams, reached out to Norbert about the plausibility of running it in a similar pairing style. Norbert said that he thought it would still work out all right, and they mirrored the pairing process. The one thing that Norbert said, and the one thing I think Seth is relatively committed to doing, is the tables themselves, how the team that only gets to pick the one matchup selects the three tables, mm-hmm. is that I think the tables, from what they're saying, the terrain is going to be wildly different on them and grossly impactful.
Yes.
Right. Meaningful terrain choice, yeah. Yeah.
Right.
So I know it obviously varies team to team, but there's going to be hopefully some people listening, and ourselves included, who have never played in this type of format. So is there some kind of like a general process or a general thing other than just keep identify your super bad matchups and your dodges and keep those people away from there?
Like, I'm not very familiar with a three-man team format, so it's I'm not sure how much you can force a matchup, because you're only, I guess, one team is only choosing one matchup, and the other team gets the other two, and just they get the toss-up.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But it's basically identify, like, yeah, if you only want to dodge one player, then I think generally you're the first person to get dropped.
You would put yourself you up first, you're saying?
Basically, right. If your team is the one to put up a player first. So that kind of makes sure that you can dodge the one thing you specifically don't want to play.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the team that does put up a player first would only choose, of course, that first matchup, so they're also choosing tables at that point.
Correct. So, I mean, that also depends on how the rest of your team's matchups goes. Usually there's one sacrifice, and you take one matchup, and the other one is a 50-50 or something like that.
Yeah, and of course it changes with team to team and what your strategy and what your matchups are, but we were kind of just looking for a generic process, you know, generic like kind of guidelines for this type of event as far as the matchup process goes. I mean, so one team picks 2/3 of the match, the other team picks all the tables. Is there, again, I know it varies, but as far as which of those maybe seems stronger or... Go ahead, Brad.
Yeah, so actually, I was kind of just going to, I think, simplify the question I think you're trying to get to. If, Charles, if you were playing this event and your team won the roll and could choose if they wanted to pick two matchups or choose the tables they were playing on, like pick the team they wanted to, let me phrase that,
this
pick
is
the side they want to represent, what side do you think has the stronger choices they can implement?
This is too assuming that the event organizer comes through with making the tables
right.
drastically.
Oh, of course. Yeah,
that's I have a feeling he is from our conversations.
He said he has. Yeah.
Right. I would think you would look at the matchups. If all three of your matchups tend to be hovering around the middle, mm-hmm. between 40% and 60%, then I would say you would probably want to pick the terrains. If you have wildly favored matches, then for at least two players, then you would want to pick matchups. So I guess some of the matches where if all three of your players into all three of theirs are kind of like, it's kind of a list chicken. I don't feel too bad, but it's not a slam dunk kind of thing. Then, you know, go for the terrain and make sure at least you get some fixed benefit out of that. But if you have good matchups in the 70% range where, you know, somebody just says, I get that player, I got this.
Right.
Then I think you want to lean toward matchups.
That seems pretty.
I like one of the first things he said about putting up. If you have somebody, because again, I've never played in this event, so conceptualizing it, like I've run through and done like a mock draft, but that's not exactly the same. But I like that when you said if you have somebody that needs, and we can talk about it because it's 2 days away and it's not a secret,
and we're not like the team to beat.
No,
there.
But like so, Ryan's our convergence player. Ryan can't see Krix.
Yeah, I just
so Ryan doesn't have a list that can play into Krix. I'm playing Signar, and our other teammate Mike is playing Grimkin. So we're both. Like, we both have lists, obviously, that can play into Krix, and Ryan can't. So Ryan would be a great candidate to throw up first.
Yeah.
And I hadn't actually thought about that, because, again, I've never gone through it. So that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's pretty much just the only way you can make sure if one player only has one dodge, you can dodge that.
So I know that you said, because I sent you over the link through Config Chamber, of which you want to follow it. It's /?? Event equals 16. And you said you were looking through lists. Are there any lists or any teams that stuck out to you as a kind of similar in the veins when you were looking at the WTC lists?
I think like that there's two, I guess two teams that kind of to me ask like the harder questions or have players that recognize. So one is Brad, your team with Ireland and Banky. You have the double Krix, and even though Banky is playing the Coven and Scourge in the Scourge theme,
mm-hmm.
He still has Denny One in Ghost Fleet, and that by itself dictates a lot of matchups.
Yeah, 100%.
The other one that I think looks pretty good is Battle Driven.
Yep.
Dan has a very similar Osram list to what I run in Hammerstrike, so I'm rooting for that. And he also has Fiona, so yeah, those are my favorites.
Yeah, we've talked to as much as Tim's Ghost Fleet list scares me because we've how good he is.
It's Tim
with
yeah.
it, and it's Tim. That Coven list with Wrongeye Snapjaw and double Satixis and then Blood Witches ambushing, like, I'm so fucking terrified of that list becoming a thing. Just in general. Not even just with Banky. That list is terrifying.
Mm. Well, Coven is a very flexible caster, so... I mean, I've seen Coven and Ghost Fleet what's the other one? Dark Host. Mm. And now Scourge seems very valid as well. They just... they just run everything well. They're like the Haley of
yeah, they are. You just drop them, take a theme and drop them in, and you can make a list work with them. That's good. That's good. Not just like, oh, it's a good, you know, a workable list.
You know what's the most horrific thing about that statement is they're the Haley of the list. They literally have the Haley of Crix.
Yeah.
Like, and yet the Coven is also the Haley of Crix. Factions shouldn't get two.
Yeah. Double or triple dipping.
So what were some of the other lists that we talked
about? No, so aside from like players you recognize, were there any, I know you mentioned the Ostrom list, was there any other list that stuck out itself? Maybe not the players name that's piloting it, but like interesting list choices?
Yeah, I noticed there's a lot of Signar players playing Siege. He's actually the most common Signar caster.
Yeah.
And I think that's just because Explosivo is Signar's only RFP.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Dan Riker from Battle Driven and I have been talking a lot about the Crix match, and I think we've come to, at least in our opinion, I know there's a lot of people that are still with like Kane 1. Well, I think Kane 1 is great. You know, a lot of people feel Siege is one of our best and only answers to just Crix in general right now. I think Crix, we've kind of flip-flopped where Crix is actually a problem for Signar, which is totally not how that normally is. And between Explosivo and the feat being able to kind of knock the Banes down to an armor where the Pow-10s can really start doing work on them with E-Leaps and the Stormstrider. Like, I know we've all just talked that Siege is just a great answer right now into Crix. At least we feel that way. I know there's a lot of Signar players out there that just don't like him and do not think he's a super viable into Crix. But yeah, I think you're going to see a lot of Siege from here on out for Signar players.
I agree. I think Siege was basically my favorite Signar caster, and he was the one I ran the most when I was playing Signar competitively. So it's good to see him making a comeback.
Yeah.
Speaking from the Crix perspective, like I was trying to plan a second list for like my LCQ pair out in War Machine Weekend that could confidently play into Siege, and it is much more difficult than previously expected. Only because E-Leaps under Siege, well, one clear, like if you bring the in-mass infantry in the Scourge list, if you go with the Tixis Raiders, but it'll also just E-Leap and kill Bane Riders under feet. So. If it's played by a competent Siege player, which I'm assuming I'll be playing against, like it's a fairly reasonable that if they're in the LCQ, they're knowing what they're doing. They're going to take advantage of their strengths in that matchup, and it's just going to be a really, really rough game.
Yeah, the one match we haven't played yet that I wanted to with Brad was I haven't got to see Siege into Coven, and that's what I'm a little concerned about, but. I think it might be okay.
Did you have Reinhold in your siege list?
No, Reinhold.
So, you can't double ground pounder anyway.
No, it wouldn't matter. It would just give me an extra shot. Yeah. But yeah, I'm very curious about Siege into Coven, especially with like the Riders.
Talking specifically the Crix matchup, I actually think the list is better if you turn the Stormstriders into Fireflies, because if you're worried about Coven, the crit blinds off Abysses are really good into Striders.
Yeah, I think on Storm Chamber, Keith was on this week, and he was actually talking about that, how Stygian Abyss, like, you just get to play that game of, like, if they crit you, you just lose 18 points. You lost your battle engine for a turn or two.
See, which is funny. If Ghost Fleet wasn't such a huge thing, I'd be playing Mom with all of the Ground Pounder jacks, because I'm immune to the blind, and Ground Pounder's fun into their feet, but I just can't play into Ghost Fleet at all.
Yeah. I'll tell you a list that I'm a little worried about that I didn't look through. On the Dapper Badgers, Dan Raven's bringing Old Witch 2, and I haven't seen her yet, so that scares me. No, I've seen her. I haven't seen her on the table.
Oh, I was just saying we could have played that this morning.
We could have played that. We should have, because I haven't seen her, so she scares me
a
little.
She's fun as hell.
Just out of unfamiliarity.
Oh, she's we have our meta right now has three or four Old Witch 2 in Kador, and I expect to see her a lot more.
She answers a lot of problems that Kador has going into some stuff, and she's just so much fun to play.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, our meta mostly it's Old Witch 2 in Wintergard. and then you would have a Victor with the artillery captain.
Mm-hmm.
And this is Dave Beauchamp's tech, so I'm just giving it away. And then you would basically, with the artillery captain, you can reroll your deviations. Mm-hmm. So you would start your turn, if Denny is in range of any kind of shooting, then you would try to drift a flare shot from Victor onto Denny. And with the reroll, you have basically a 75% chance to land it.
Five, yep.
Yeah. Any three inch or less, basically. And once you clip her, she loses stealth and she's defense 14. And then Owich just walks up, shoots her blind gun or scourge at her, and there she goes.
Yep.
Defense 10, non-stealth to Negra. Blomp, blomp, blomp.
Oh, I was
she wrote.
Through there. Actually, there is an Old Witch 3 player in Grimkin. I didn't realize that there's... I don't know. How is she? I know I liked her better in Kador when I originally thought
funny,
about
like,
it.
So it's funny. When I look at her, I like her better in Kador, but I only played Grimkin in the CID. When I was talking to a couple Grimkin players online, they actually really like her.
Mm-hmm.
In Grimkin, which I just don't, I'm missing something, but it's, I don't have enough reps into or with Grimkin. So
actually, speaking of like people that kind of are playing some new stuff, this guy kind of lucked out. If you go to Cirque Merc and Creel, Sean Clement took the gamble on Madrak 1 and won.
Yeah.
Cool.
The list is still under, like it's still a legal list. And is running Gunbjorn, so hello, Explosivo. And new Madrak, where nothing is can knock down, and you
crazy.
Can't charge me for a turn.
Yeah, and I get to heal all my heavies. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I saw that as well, because I was looking at his list trying to figure out if it got fucked with points-wise, but it didn't. Still legit, so good for him. That's cool.
Well, the Trouble at CID just updated today, so
yep.
I expect a lot of people will be playing new things very soon.
Yeah, I didn't. Yeah, we'll do that another week. I was going to talk a little bit about that, but that's fine. I am excited. I liked all the changes that came out for Trolls. That does look.
You mean they made the faction work?
Yeah,
kind of.
Yeah, sure. So anything else on these lists? Was there any other list that you looked at and you thought like were kind of cool or different or just, interesting, or is everything else kind of status quo?
Well, there's Fear Fetish. There's a Nick Massa running Fiona in Talion.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm very curious on, how he does.
Well, looking at the list and everything on it, if you put it on the table, how comfortable and confident do you feel with the models in it?
Yeah.
That into the rest of the list at this event, I don't think it would be very comfortable. There are very few list pairings on the other side where I can drop Fiona and kind of count on Fiona to kind of force a pairing choice.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I mean, his other one is Thexus with some of the Crick solos. So I think that's fairly reliable as well.
Mm-hmm. I think he's got 50 drudges on the table.
Yeah,
one,
yep.
Two, three, four. Yep. That's correct.
So yeah, that looks like, the list I'm guessing he'll be counting on most of the time. And Fiona is like, if I get to play her, then great. At least that's how I look at it.
And while we're talking Mercs on Pants Off Dance Off, which is the Jake Hoffman, Tom Hoffman, Jeremy Miller team, you have Damiano in Irregulars. And he's got Triple Nomad, Silas, Iris, Rupert, Acosta, Max Niss, Double Eliminators, Ian and Holt, and Triple Halbs. What do you think about that?
Well, this list doesn't have any of the advanced deploy guns that I would really like to bring with Damiano. But it's got a very strong infantry contingent. And it's kind of like, oh, well, if it can survive into melee, then it will hit like a truck. And Damiano has no problem breaking any kind of armor.
Yeah. Yeah, like you said, I mean, he can fix
everything. I hear plus 3 and plus 2 for any stat you want. It's pretty good.
Yeah. Yep. And then he's complementing that with a regular's Shay 1 list with, or Shay 1, I was just reading off the thing with Shay. Two Nomads, a Talon, Reinhold, Dirty Meg running a freebooter, Iris, Rockbottom, Rupert, Rucker Shaw with a freebooter, Acosta, Terran, Ayanna Holt, Double Halb, and a Commodore Cannon.
I guess a freebooter with flank could get really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Especially you have the Commodore Cannon to facilitate the knockdown.
Yeah, I would say especially if they're knocked down, be super gross.
Mm.
Was that 4 dice damage between flank and
trash?
Yep, it's real good. And if you're because Shay has the spell called Coupe de Main, it gives privateer models +2 inch movement and free charges.
Not to mention
so
his
you
feet.
Can actually have your marshal call the I think the Crush Order.
Mm-hmm.
So you get +2 to melee damage and an extra melee attack.
Oh my god!
And free charge.
Oh my god! You're right, because the charge is free from because it's a privateer model.
And you have Ian and Holt if you want to proc harm and just fuck the world.
Yep.
Oh, that's brutal.
So charges in, auto hits at power 16 with 5 dice, and then you hit 2 more times at 4 dice.
Yeah, that'll kill some
seems
shit.
Fine.
That seems fine for a 9-point model on a 3-point Jack Marshall. It seems totally fine.
Well, what are the drives for Dirty Meg and Rutger Shaw?
Meg gives you a Pathfinder and Reposition 3.
That's good.
And Shaw gives you Shield Dart.
Both good.
Seems fine.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, I think I have a very similar Shay list. And then I have a Buccaneer on Shay instead of the Talon. So just one more source of knockdown and freebooters go.
Oh, man. That sounds sweet. So so let's hop back. I think we did some decent coverage of the event. It is a little smaller. Like I said, it's the first year running it. So they're hoping to grow this and have this be a lot larger in the years to come. Which will, is exciting. Well, I'm excited for it. It's this upcoming weekend.
Any chance if this goes to 5-man teams next year, Charles, the Canadian King comes down?
Sorry, repeat that again?
Sure. I said any chance if this goes to 5-man teams next year, we have a Canadian team come down?
Oh, definitely. I mean, we got a lot of very eager players in you know, Southern Ontario and Quebec as well. So I think we're going to put together a team for the ATC in January. So, yeah, definitely.
That's exciting.
For whenever War Machine Week, War Machine Weekend's what, like a week and a half. Again, I owe you a drink. And if we play each other in the LCQ, you know, just, you know, let me have it.
I can't play in the LCQ. I have a spot.
Fine.
Fuck you, Brad.
I know.
I didn't know either. So that was funny, though.
I'll take the beer.
He'll take the beer, and you can just imagine him beating your ass.
Yeah, just get him a beer while he's playing in the real event. No, I'm just kidding.
Has the bracket come out yet? Do you guys know who you're playing in the round yet, or no?
No idea. Haven't even figured out what I'm going to bring yet and what else I need to paint.
Are you going back to Scornford or still in Mercenaries?
I think Mercenaries because it's just familiarity, and I'm still trying to figure out if I could, figure out a counter to Ghost Fleet. And it's also the question of models painted. Like, a lot of my Scorn is not painted at the moment.
So let me ask a somewhat different question, kind of jumping back onto the Mercs, and then we'll probably wrap up. Let's just theoretically say Ghost Fleet gets some sort of hit or whatever, and some of the other themes, the pirate theme, the Dark Coast, obviously is already super popular, even potentially Dark Industries. How does Mercs, is Ghost Fleet the only super issue for Mercs? Like, how are they going into the rest of those themes if Ghost Fleet didn't exist?
I feel okay into the rest of the themes at the moment. Like I said, my pairing going to WDC, I feel pretty comfortable into almost everything. I mean, obviously, the new themes comes out, and there's going to be a lot of changes in the meta. But yeah, Ghost Fleet is pretty much the biggest issue, because the tools you take to counter Ghost Fleet makes you a lot weaker in all the other matchups.
Right.
But if you don't have the tools, you just flat out lose.
Yep. And I know that's a problem for some other factions. I was just curious if it was like, just a Crix problem in general, or if it was only that the Ghost Fleet just fucks your pairing so bad that you have to, you know, the things you have to take for it just don't go into anything else.
It does. Like, if not for Ghost Fleet, I would not have that Damiano list I mentioned earlier. Like, it would never be built in that direction.
Sure. So themes came out, and you have so many options. Like, how do you... Was that enough? Are the Merc players souped with these themes? Does that get them to, I don't want to say a higher level, because, you know, it's not like they're not a real faction, but like, where does that put them with everybody else?
I would think slightly above average still. Like, they're not, I don't think they're dominating. But they do have the tools to deal with almost everything in the meta. And they ask some interesting questions on their own.
Yeah, I mean, some of the stuff that we talked about, I hadn't even thought of. We don't have a Mercs player. So some of the things you had brought to our attention, like, that all sounds really, really interesting. There's some pretty cool stuff.
I really like them getting the Irregulars theme, because that gives Mercs back, I think, one of its greatest advantages, which is the massive catalog it can pull from. I mean, like, just the synergies and stuff that, like, like I said, like you said, we don't really have a Mercs player. You could sit down across a Mercs player and all of a sudden be looking at like a 7 armor swing. You're like, where the hell did this all come from? And it's because of Huck Chalk and Ion of Hold and Ragman and like all this shit. And you're just like, what the hell?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I think, just having that variety opens up so much. And, you know, right now I feel like it's almost like the beginning of Mark 3 again, where, you know, you can go to a tournament and not have a very good idea of what's going to be there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that to me is like, it's new, it's exciting.
It's a whole new world.
Except pretty Ghost much.
Except except Crix is still a thing.
That's part of the old world.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't tell you, that's that little island over there.
Brad, do you have anything else?
No, I'm just going to keep playing Crix.
Yeah.
Are you gonna start playing all the power casters finally?
I mean, no. not really. I'm gonna stick over on my island of Lich
One. And
I really like Lich One.
I know. We were talking about it today. Well, on the Facebook, somebody posted on Facebook, and you were just talking about it.
Well, yeah, Jeff tagged me, and some guy was asking, like, what do you do with Lich One? I'm like, well, all these things.
Let me step in. This is a perfect place for me.
I think he's great. I think he answers a lot. He's got an armor swing. He himself can fight against a lot of infantry with Curse of Shadows and his feet. And now we're talking about Crix, and this was a Merc episode.
It was. Yeah. I just, you can't go anywhere. You can't go anywhere and not talk about Crix.
You can't avoid Crix.
No.
It's just like Mark 2.
Exactly. Yeah, we're right back to Mark 2. It sucks. So, Charles, thanks so much for coming on. This was great. Had a blast, and thanks for the great knowledge into the event and the faction.
As a side note, before we wrap up, it is Banky.
Why? Oh, he's the problem.
We didn't have any issues.
Audio's been, well, don't say that. I didn't release the episode. I didn't edit it yet. So don't say that. There's so many things that could still happen between now and me releasing it.
You mean these things don't just magically go on the internet?
Yeah, I know. I know that's what you fuckers think. Yeah, well, we don't finish and it just appears on online. Thank you for coming on.
This was
fun. No problem.
No, thank you. See you in a week and a half.
Cool. Probably 2 weeks. War Machine weekend is.
I don't know, 2 weeks, week and a half, whatever it is.
Yeah.
So when Brad randomly shows up at your house, he technically warned you right now.
That's true.
Yeah. Two and a half weeks. Sorry.
Yeah. Good luck down at War Machine Weekend.
Thank you. And good luck with your Boker brawl.
Thanks.
I'm going to try and make it so Banky loses. I'm going to drag him down. I'm going to throw every game.
That's all you have to do, actually, Brad, is just make sure you do better than either Mike or Banky, and it'll be great.
Good luck.
Yeah, I know. I know, but it's worth it. So, all right, we're going to wrap up, so thanks for listening. I'm Grant.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Third.
I'm Charles. One.